Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Good morning, angels, and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party, the podcast network that brings you podcasts that are as irresistible as Baby Yoda, but won't keep you waiting around for merchandise until May 2020. On today's show, we review Charlie's Angels and take a look at the career of Kristen Stewart. With me, as always, is the Bosley to my Charlie. It's Lee Hutchison. How are you?
Hello, Stewart.
Stuart? Who's Stuart? Oh, yeah, no, that's my other name. Yeah, I got really confused there. I know, that's my code name. Yeah, that'd be my code name. So, yeah. Charlie's Angels is a reboot of the franchise that spawned a TV series that ran from 1976 to 1981, and then two films featuring Drew Barrymore, Cameron Diaz, and Lucy Liu. This new version has been written and directed by Elizabeth Banks, who directed Pitch Perfect 2, and the Angels this time are played by Elle Belinska, Naomi Scott, and Kristen Stewart. When a young systems engineer blows a whistle on a dangerous technology, the Angels are called into action, putting their lives on the line to protect us all. That's from IMDb, to protect us all. Like, the film viewers are also at danger from watching this film and being involved in the action. Perhaps that's actually true. So, Lee, what were your first thoughts on Charlie's Angels? Were you looking forward to it? What did you think of the marketing of the campaign so far?
I was immediately sold because it was Stewart Squared. I like Kristen Stewart. I really love Sir Patrick Stewart. So I was like, win-win. I was immediately going to be spending my money on seeing this film. Yeah, I was really fussed about the marketing, to be honest. The posters on the side of buses, etc. I was just more sort of like good faith in that. I really like those actors, so I'm going to give it a fair shake. And I kind of thought it would do all right in America, to be honest. But then it seemed to tank there, and then sort of Elizabeth Banks made some comments, and then there was blowback, and it was like, oh, right, it kind of, by the time it arrived in the UK, like, I was keen to still see it because I'd committed to the idea of it, and my girlfriend was unwell that week, and I was like, oh, do you still want to come see Charlie's Angels with me? And she went, yeah, it's a film I can just basically sit there and watch, and I don't need to think about it, which was somewhat damning, perhaps, about Charlie's Angels. But, yeah, we went along to see it, and I don't think it was that great a film, to be honest. I think the ultimate problem that I had with the film was, and I hate to say this, I thought Elizabeth Banks did a pretty terrible job of directing it. Like, I think it has a pretty good cast. I think it has some nice ideas, but I don't ever get sort of the kind of a visual punch to the film where none of it sort of seems to come together. I didn't think the action scenes were well directed. I didn't think the comedy was well directed. I didn't feel that there was anything that kind of lent itself into the genre visually. I was sitting there like clamoring for someone like maybe an Edgar Wright, or, you know, maybe a Catherine Bigelow, or someone that could do something with this action. You know, I'd sort of seen Elizabeth Banks' action sequence in Pitch Perfect 3 with the start with the exploding boat, and that wasn't much better than the ultimate direction with this. And I feel sorry to kind of say that, but I felt that sort of the blame for this movie sort of lay at Elizabeth Banks's door. I think she didn't make use of all the great tools that she had at her disposal, and she let them down, to be honest.
Well, I think I'm just gonna say it's unfair to criticize her for the boat explosion in Pitch Perfect 3, because she didn't actually direct.
Oy.
She's only directed Pitch Perfect 2, which I thought was good, but again, it's more of a musical performance style of direction and whatever. And, you know, Pitch Perfect 2 was actually pretty funny. You know, she can do comedy. I think she's a great comedic actress herself. You know, I've seen her even from like the sort of beginning days of like when she was in Scrubs and stuff like that. I always thought she's a great talent on screen, very, very funny. She did really well. You know, Pitch Perfect 2 was the highest grossing one of the saga, so, you know, she did great there. She was given the chance to do this. I think, like you say, action sequences are not very well directed. There's nothing that makes them stand out from any other sort of blockbuster sequence. You know, it's very sort of cookie cutter. Oh, there's a car chase. Oh, there's some hand-to-hand combat. That's fine. And yeah, I think that's, I mean, I'm not sure if her comments were entirely fair, that, You know, apparently, you know, blokes will only go see action films directed by women if they're part of a DC or Marvel Universe saga, I think. Was anyone ever really clamoring for a reboot of Charlie's Angels? I'm not sure if we were. You know, it has only been about, what, 17 years since we had the last ones. I mean, I think this film did do some things better than the McG ones. I mean, in terms of sort of the characters themselves, you know, if we look back to, I mean, I think I caught the original Charlie's Angels or part of it, like maybe like the second half on TV about a month ago or something. They were probably repeating them on ITV2 or something in order for the new film coming out. And there was that shot of them sort of coming out of the water and then sort of stripping off out of their wetsuits. And I'm like, well, this is clearly directed by a man because, you know, there was no need for that. And the fact that each of the female characters in the original, well, the films basically all have relationships with men and stuff like this. This time there was a slight flirtation with one character and a guy, but, you know, the rest of it, none of the female characters were defined by having a relationship. And even then, I think Kristen Stewart's character was certainly looking slightly flexible in terms of her attraction to people as well. So I thought that was sort of a great step forward. You know, then there's this whole widening of the story arc. You know, is it a reboot? Is it a sequel? You know, you've got all these Bosleys, which are now a rank within the agency. And, you know, I guess Patrick Stewart's character was the lead Bosley. You know, I'm not sure if that was a choice born out of the fact that Bill Murray didn't return for the sequel Full Throttle and then was replaced by Bernie Mac. And then they wrote in the fact that this is now a sort of a role rather than a character. What did you make of those changes to the sort of the franchise?
I did laugh, I must admit, when Patrick Stewart was badly photoshopped on top of Bill Murray and Bernie Mac's face. And it was just like, oh, they've gone there. That's really quite funny. I actually recently rewatched also the Charlie's Angels films. I watched them on an iPad on the way to and coming back from Amsterdam. And yeah, like, I saw the second one actually on a date when I was like 16 and stuff. Like, saw that as a double bill with Bruce Almighty in between a Pizza Hut. So, you know, rolling back the years there. But yeah, I had no problem with it sort of being expanded to it being an international kind of setup. Like, I was totally fine with that. And I just found it funny that sort of they really went out there and removed Bill Murray and Bernie Mac. It was kind of funny.
Yeah, so, I mean, what did you make of the three angels? Well, technically there's two angels, and then there's Naomi Scott, who for me was one of the few highlights of the Aladdin remake. I thought she was actually very good in that, but she comes in and she's the whistleblower in the tech company, of which they have to go in and steal a piece of tech and then take it out. And sort of just watching that whole thing, I'm like, wasn't that the plot of the original Charlie's Angels? Didn't they have to go in and get a bit of tech that then, of course, they were then double-crossed, and then it turned out that someone else needed that, and then, you know, it seems quite similar to the plot of this film, doesn't it?
Yeah, what I found really odd, like, this was a bit I disliked a lot about the film, and not much I really disliked, even though I had issues, was that they have this, like, little technology that can, like, if people are, like, near it, it can, like, zap them and kill them, like, dun-dun-dun. And, like, then there's, like, the security guard that's kind of just, you know, a little bit pervy, you know, but just generally going around his job for most of the part of the film. And then he gets, like, killed because he's, like, really close to this technology, this new potential angel, Elena, is at fault. And you think, oh, my God, it's going to be a bit of a dramatic moment. You know, she's killed someone unintentionally, but she's done it and she's at fault. And it's kind of like, okay, that just happened. Oh, yeah, he's definitely going to be okay. No, he's dead. And it felt like an odd moment of, like, this could be maybe like a learning point or sort of part of their character's journey to becoming an angel, you know, responsibility, etc. But it just kind of got glossed over. I thought that was a really odd part of the technology, but I also thought the same as you, very much like the first one. And, you know, there's only been sort of three Charlie's Angels movies in the past 20 years. I don't think they need to be repeating sort of the same sort of plot lines.
You know, I mean, yeah, no, I'm thinking about that moment. Yeah, it did seem quite jarring at that point where Yeah, you see, it's she should have maybe been haunted by this, or sort of, you know, it's, she's basically taken someone's life. You know, she maybe didn't mean it, but she also didn't do enough to save him. And then, yeah, it should have had more of an effect on her that maybe would have come back later when she maybe had been facing another villain and had to decide, is she going to go through with it or something like that. There needed to be more weight on that character, I think, based on that particular decision. And, you know, I thought she was good. What did you make of the other two angels and their roles in this? Yes, you've got Elle, I think, and then of course Kristen Stewart as well. Did you think they made fine additions to the franchise?
I thought Elle was really good. I thought she was a standout, you know, a real kind of badass action hero. Kristen Stewart, I thought, was good. Again, I sort of felt that, much like the action, Elizabeth Banks didn't sort of play to her, you know, strengths. Like, she has these kind of witty lines, but the direction for it is so kind of plodding. I just felt like better direction could have really served Sabina's character kind of better, to be honest. I just felt like you sort of have her having these, like, quippy one-liners, but it's very television sort of style kind of direction, and it just sort of just has her sort of there making these quips, and they're just sort of there in sort of flat direction. It just didn't kind of help the character that much. She just sort of looked like she was just someone just chatting away to herself, and you didn't really sort of get people kind of responding and kind of reacting off it, or sort of the direction kind of complimenting this character. I thought it worked okay for maybe sort of the other two, but I thought kind of Sabina was let down.
Yeah, no, I think for me, this was one of the biggest disappointments, was the underserving of Sabina's character. And I think Kristen Stewart, what she was trying to do with her performance, like you say, wasn't backed up with the sort of direction and the sort of flow. I think she seemed on a different film at times to the other two. She was sort of playing it and trying to take it in one particular direction, whereas the rest of the film was going in another sort of safer, more sort of cookie cutter style. Because, I mean, the plot is nothing new, to the point where, I mean, from like one of the first opening scenes, I was like, well, I think I know who the real bad guy in this is going to be. And you know what? And then they try to send you down one particular route, but then you know it's going to come back around. And surprise, surprise, it turned out exactly as I thought it was. Now, you know, I don't know if it's just watching the movies or whatever, or even just watching previous Charlie's Angels movies where they have done a very similar thing, and it's just they're rehashing and recycling these tropes to the point where it's so obvious. I'm not sure if you had the same thing, but I mean, it does seem to fall down on several points. And Charlie's Angels, unfortunately, now is added to the list of movies that has the unfortunate line of dialogue of, so when someone's talking about a piece of tech, you then get the line, oh, it would set off an EMP. An EMP? What's that? Oh, it's an electromagnetic pulse. Every single movie that has ever mentioned the phrase EMP has to follow it up with someone going, what's an EMP? Well, it's an electromagnetic pulse. Why not just say an electromagnetic pulse to begin with, and then save yourself two lines of dialogue? It always frustrates me. I'm sure there's a super cut out there on YouTube of every single movie that has featured the phrase EMP, electromagnetic pulse. So yeah, that was one of my huge frustrations. But in terms of the sort of double switch and sort of bait and switch of who the main villain was, did you see this one coming, or...?
Yeah, as soon as Patrick Stewart kind of exited stage left at the beginning of the film, I was like, yep, he's going to come back as a villain in some point. You know, it was kind of quite predictable, and I sort of felt that they weren't going to play Elizabeth Banks as the villain. So yeah, it was quite predictable. And yeah, again, as you've seen, like, some of these tropes we've already seen in the previous Charlie's Angels films, and, you know, I can understand sort of for a franchise that is like putting out loads of films that there can be some crossover, but there really is no excuse. Even like when like you try and play up like it's a former like angel that's gone rogue. Has that happened before? Oh my God, it's never happened before. Well, actually, yeah, it has happened before. And then I'm sitting there as an audience member going, it happened. Demi Moore's character was that. Like, they shouldn't really be doing this so predictable and playing on the tropes. It was so poor that it went that way.
I know, it was really disappointing because, yeah, like you say, they try and, I mean, spoiler warning is now over, but I think that most people have either, if you're listening to this, you've either seen it or, I mean, your window of opportunity for seeing it is probably pretty slim now, given that we're about a week away from Star Wars and Cats. So yeah, if you want to see it, go and see it now. But unfortunately, yes, Patrick Stewart does turn out to be a bad guy. And if you're looking for a great film that's got Patrick Stewart as a bad guy, we can highly recommend Green Room. So yes, there is that one. But I think, like you say, they try and sort of steer you down this route of, oh, Elizabeth Banks is going to be the guy. But it's like, well, of course she isn't. You're trying too hard for that to work. It has, you know, it's going to be Patrick Stewart. So sadly, that's a thing there. But I mean, this was clearly sort of trying to set up a new version of the franchise, to the point where, you know, you've got these sort of, it's almost like the film came alive in the sort of these sort of multiple post credits stings, where you've got them, Naomi Scott's character trying to going through her training to become an angel with all these cameos and stuff like that, and that's the point when it almost felt like it was coming alive and most akin to the other Charlie's Angels movies. But there was, I want to talk about this one because it seemed to be setting up with a mysterious voice on the edge of the phone. There was a picture that was featured in the original Charlie's Angels film. I'm just going to ask, who do you think is the voice of Charlie? And because this is probably going to get revealed I don't think it's going to get a sequel now, but if it did, it looked like it was going to get revealed that there was maybe not the original Charlie is now Charlie. Who did you think it was?
Well, I'm not too sure. I'm not overly familiar with sort of the old kind of characters really, so I wasn't too sure. I was like, oh, like for me immediately watched, I was like, oh, it's a woman, but I don't know who the woman is, so like my depth of knowledge on sort of the franchise isn't as good to kind of get there. I didn't think it was any of the sort of key ones perhaps from the old Charlie's Angels movies. I say the old ones from the decade or two ago, so yeah, I'm not too sure who. I would have to probably defer to yourself here.
I was thinking it was potentially Drew Barrymore, because that photo was the one that Sam Rockwell's character had, that he believed Charlie was responsible for the death of his father or something like that. So I'm thinking that it's potentially Drew Barrymore, only because they had that scene and then about 30 seconds later it popped up that she was an executive producer. So, but I don't know, it might be... I would say it could have been a clever bait and switch like they did in Hobbs and Shaw by having this mysterious voice on the end of the phone, but it sounded like Ryan Reynolds, but no, it can't. It's too obvious for it to be Ryan Reynolds. Apparently it might be Keanu Reeves going on the future. But knowing how they managed to botch the whole, is Elizabeth Banks going to turn on them or not, it probably is actually Drew Barrymore, and they just really have signposted it far too clearly for that. So, I mean, future of the franchise-wise, do you think we will see a sequel to this film, or is it a case of goodbye Charlie?
Yeah, I think the box office was so pitiful for this film, sadly, that, you know, we're not gonna see one. And I think ultimately it just came down to the film wasn't that good, to be honest. It was, you wouldn't begrudge it if you caught it on Netflix, but in terms of kind of box office, it, you know, I wasn't that blown away by it as a cinematic experience. It didn't have me rushing to me saying, hey, go see this film. You know, I spoke with one of my co-workers and he's usually so positive in his Letterboxd ratings and stuff, and I went to him before seeing the film. I was like, oh, do I need to stay to the end for any post-credit thing? And he was like, yeah, there's some stuff during the credits, but you'll just be so desperate to leave by that point, you won't want to bother. So, you know, that's pretty damning from even the most positive of people.
Yeah, no, I mean, I went in really wanting to enjoy it, and it, you know, it was passable entertainment. I mean, like Joe said, you know, you could just sit there and watch it. It was enjoyable enough, but did it set the world alight? No. Did it have enough points of differentiation to sort of warrant it being there and to showcase a new angle for the franchise? Certainly not, so I don't think it will. I mean, in terms of its failure at the box office, do you think it was a case of gender bias against this female directed franchise, or was it just the fact that people really weren't all that interested in seeing a new Charlie's Angels film?
It's probably the latter. I certainly hope it's not the first one, but you know, I just feel that there wasn't much buzz going for this film, and you know, the marketing campaign became sort of non-existent really in the UK. Like, you would see it on the side of buses, but there wasn't sort of the traditional kind of media you would expect for a film like this, who's maybe aiming at sort of the younger crowd and audience to get behind it. You know, a generation of film fans, you know, aren't necessarily kind of Charlie's Angels fans. They're films that you might catch randomly on Netflix, but it seems sort of that moment has passed, and you know, there's not enough crowd of, you know, fans and stands to go see this film without sort of relying on sort of a, you know, getting the general public involved and checking them out. And you know, people are maybe saving their money for Star Wars on the horizon. It's getting near Christmas, people are having to pick and choose their films. You know, I think it's, there's ultimately a lot of factors going against the film, but I think ultimately it was the quality at the end and the lack of word of mouth that went against it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a good point you make there about sort of maybe people saving their money for that, because, I mean, we're sitting here as, I was going to use the word privilege, but, you know, we pay for our Cineworlds Unlimited cards, but yeah, I mean, it means that we can go and see a film without really having to worry about the cost of it. So, you know, we can take chances on stuff like this. But, you know, if when a film comes out in America, and I think there was about a 2-week, 3-week delay before it came out in the UK, so by that time the word of mouth had filtered through, and then people were maybe just a bit reticent to spend their hard-earned money on something that they knew was not potentially going to be good. And like you say, we are entering a rather crowded period in the marketplace, so there is that. But I mean, a lot of the sort of discourse around this film was linked to the fact that this was sort of Kristen Stewart's return to the sort of, I'm not going to say, well, summer blockbuster, but not summer blockbuster, because it was released in November, but blockbuster franchise since Twilight. And you know, people seem to be giving her a bit of stick for this when, you know, Robert Pattinson from the Twilight saga has basically had a very similar trajectory, career path. You know, we discussed this on a previous episode of Filibuster where we stand Robert Pattinson, and I think we're a couple of K-Stew stands as well, where, you know, following Twilight, she kind of purposely made the decision to take sort of smaller roles, independent films, stay out of the limelight, and then eventually come full circle in she chose Charlie's Angels. Robert Pattinson is going to go back into the blockbuster world with The Batman. Some have claimed that he's the worst vampire ever, then that it's taken him sort of about 12, 13 years for him to change from a vampire into a bat. But, you know, what do you think, what do you make of this, where people are sort of criticizing sort of, or not giving Kristen Stewart the same sort of respect and recognition as Pattinson has for his post-Twilight career?
I think one of those ones, I think Kristen Stewart has been picking, obviously, indie films as well, but I think the quality has been a bit less than sort of our Pats' ones. You know, you sort of look at some of the ones from the past year. So Personal Shopper, absolute real highlight. And then sort of like, kind of since then, you've kind of got Lizzie, which was I enjoyed it quite a bit, actually, but didn't sort of seem to set the box office alight or critical reviews very well. We actually had the director on for this film, and it was a real pleasure to chat with him. J.T. Leroy, another one that sort of didn't seem to get much in the way of press attention. I think it's like, it's only came out 1 year ago, and I think you can buy it for like £1 on iTunes. You know, Seberg, which is going to come out kind of around now in America, early next year here in the UK. She was good in it. Fine film, nothing perhaps spectacular. And then you go into sort of Charlie's Angels, and then she's kind of got this big Fox kind of tentpole movie underwater in 2020. So she hasn't had the greatest run recently, whereas sort of with our Pats, you get your movies like the Lighthouse, for example. The name's just completely scared. Good Time, you know, films that people get really excited about that become sort of real word of mouth hits. And kind of Kristen Stewart hasn't really had that in a little while now. Sort of Personal Shopper was probably the peak of that sort of period, you know. But in amongst those, you sort of still had a few films that didn't really land. American Ultra, you know, Equals, we reviewed that on the A24 project. Not the greatest film really in the world. You know, Clydes of Sails Marie, another good film. You know, she's sort of, the quality of the indie project she's been choosing haven't either been the greatest, haven't been kind of acclaimed as well as kind of our Pats. Maybe our Pats have just been choosing them a little bit better, I think.
Yeah, it's a weird one, because yeah, I think, like you say, some of the choices she's made in the last couple of years hasn't reached, certainly, I mean, our Pats is on probably the best streak of his career at the moment. But, you know, I think it's like she got a lot of criticism for her role in Twilight, and he did as well. But I don't think that was down to the actors. I mean, I think some of it you can see like in like the audio commentaries and in the press tours when they make fun of the franchise and stuff, that they're switched on and stuff like that. It was just, I don't think either of them probably realised what that franchise was going to become when it started, and then they were kind of locked into it and they were kind of like going through the motions towards the end. But I mean, you know, she started off, she had a great role as in Panic Room, and then sort of around the time of, actually around the time that Twilight came out, you know, we had, she had roles in like Into the Wild, and then Adventureland, I thought was a great film. The Runaways, she was good in. And then, you know, it seemed to sort of reach that peak with the sort of Snow Whites and the Huntsman as well, that people just really sort of turned on her for some reason. But then, you know, I think, like you say, Personal Shopper is probably her best film and best role to date. I really liked Clouds of Sils Maria, and as far as I'm aware, she's still the only American actor to win a César French award for an acting performance. So, I mean, she clearly does have talent. It's just, for some reason or another, I don't know if it's, she's never really played the game. Again, I'm using my inverted commas that you can't see, in terms of the press and stuff like that. She's never been maybe the most sort of open sort of interviewee, although she now seems to be sort of maybe loosening up a bit. You know, she was on Saturday Night Live and stuff like that. So perhaps she's now coming back into to playing the game a bit more. But, you know, it's, I mean, she was in Still Alice as well, which was very critically acclaimed. Do you think, you know, this is basically a point to basically plug our other podcast and whatever, but does, you know, like you say, she was in Equals, but does she need to maybe sign up to a few more A24 films to get that street cred back into her CV?
Yeah, I think she needs to be sort of looking at some, you know, continuing sort of picking a lot of these indie movies, but, you know, just maybe looking a bit better at the kind of the quality of them all, really, and, you know, just maybe sort of working with some interesting kind of directors. I mean, sort of kind of Personal Shopper aside, she's not worked with any sort of prominent kind of directors that way that sort of Arpatz has, where, you know, kind of really interesting, unique kind of up and coming directors, or directors that have been known for getting some fantastic performances out of it. You know, she's maybe getting, working with some good scripts or some interesting characters. You know, Seberg is an interesting kind of wee political film. J.T. Leroy, another interesting character. Maybe she needs to work with some directors that kind of will complement her talent and push her further as an actor, the way that sort of Robert Pattinson has kind of benefited from that. You know, that could be, you know, a way, just sort of picking the projects, but also picking the talent she works with as well, you know, people that she can really draw from.
I know, because I think Robert Pattinson has been, he's basically worked with the Safdie brothers after emailing them saying that he enjoyed one of the films, and then has done that. I think he did the same with Robert Eggers, so he's been seeking out directors he wants to. So I think perhaps maybe Kristen Stewart needs to move into like a production role or something, you know, find a script and then find like a interesting filmmaker to work with in order to really sort of showcase her talent, because it is there, it's undeniable that she's a very talented actress given the right role. It's just, yeah, I think Holly needs to wake up and find the right people to work with her in order to bring out that sort of talent, I think, as well. But, you know, we're sort of talking about talent and working with, I mean, she's someone who's worked with female filmmakers in the past, and we champion female filmmakers, unlike the Golden Globes, you know, who have yet again dropped the ball and only nominated male directors in that category this year, as we found out today. But what have you picked for us for this week in terms of our 52 films by women choice?
Yeah, I have picked Hail Satan, which has arrived on Netflix this week from director Penny Lane. So I think we discussed this before when we were reviewing The Witch. Sort of the Church of Satan have a pretty awesome social media strategy online, and this documentary really kind of looks at sort of the rise of the Church of Satan and why we should probably all get behind the Church of Satan and their work that they're doing. So I would highly recommend people to check out this documentary.
Excellent. No, this is one that I'd heard great things about and had missed at my local independent cinema, so I'm glad it's on Netflix. So I'm definitely going to try and check that out before the end of the year. And my pick this week is a film which I was not expecting to see, because I think it was the Cineworld Unlimited secret screening this past week, and I was hoping for Little Women, even though you kind of did spoil it for me and tell me exactly what it was, but I always thought there might have been a chance, you never know. And also I had a free evening, so I went along and watched it, and I'm glad I did, because I watched Queen and Slim, which is directed by Melina Matsoukas, and it is about two characters, Queen, who is a lawyer, and Slim, who is her Tinder date, who on the way back from the date at a diner, which didn't go particularly well, they're pulled over by a cop who it basically one thing leads to another. Let's see, he's a white cop and he's slightly racist, and basically it ends up that they accidentally shoot and kill this cop, and then she basically says, we need to go on the run or our lives are over. And basically what we get is a lot of people have called it a Bonnie and Clyde of this generation. I would say it's potentially more Thelma and Louise, and that Thelma and Louise were sort of accidentally, or sort of more, they weren't glorified, and they didn't want to do what they did. They just ended up in a terrible situation where they went on the run. So it's kind of similar to that, but it's quite interesting. You know, it's got a lot to do with sort of race relations and the sort of treatment of people by the police in America at the moment. It's very, very topical. It's very well made. Great two central performances. I was there sort of watching it, but then I had this awkward situation where I was questioning the actions of the characters, going, well, I wouldn't do that. But then I then realised, hang on, I'm white. I've never been racially profiled by a cop. Of course, I have no idea what they would do in that situation. And I'm sure it's actually all basically, yeah, that is what I think it's going to, a lot of people are going to see themselves in this film and basically see a very strong message in this. And this one comes out, so end of January over here in the UK. So it's definitely one to recommend for when it eventually comes out over here. But it was a surprise screening. I know these ones, people always think, you know, it's December, oh, it's going to be Star Wars or whatever. And it wasn't, but I'm very glad to say that nobody in my cinema walked out. Normally people walk out when they don't like the look of a film, but everyone stayed for it. And I think it was definitely worth the surprise on that one. So yeah. So that brings us...
Yeah, I definitely need to check that one out.
Yeah, no, it's definitely recommended, and I think when you get to see it, you'll be able to add it to your 52 Films of Women target for 2020. And what are you up to at the moment, actually? What's your running total at? Even though I know we mentioned about two a week here, but what have you managed to get up to?
I'm currently on 88, and I think I can get to 100 before the end of the year. I've got a few iTunes rentals to get through, a couple films to see at the cinema. So yeah, I'm pretty confident I can hit the 100 mark, which would be quite nice.
Excellent. I think I'm around about the sort of 70 mark. So I think I'll try and get to 75, especially if I put Hail Satan on, and I've got Greta Gerwig's Little Women to come up as well. And I'm off to see A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, which is also directed by a woman. So there we go. I might be able to catch you up. So hopefully you've liked our recommendations. Please, you know, always get in touch and let us know if you've caught anything that we should be watching which has been directed by a woman or a man. You know, we're all about equality here. You know, we'll be back next week with another episode, and then we'll be back over Christmas and New Year with our best of 2019 and then best of the decades, where we'll be getting Kim back in order to find out what she liked over the last decade as well. So look forward to that. But in the meantime, have a great week, and we'll catch you next time. Bye bye. Bye bye. Bye bye. Bye bye. Bye bye.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.